and I will be the moderator for our webinar today. I'm looking forward to an excellent presentation here. We're talking about today about using figures to state the facts, how the agricultural industry uses data. The importance of data is a really critical matter for us today. We're in an environment where increasingly fiscal constraints are affecting the government's ability to provide data, but data remains as important as ever to public and private sector decision makers and to the smooth functioning of markets. And certainly the situation today with uncertainty about weather and crop yields is just a reminder about how important data are for our industry. Here are a couple of little reminders on procedure for those of you who haven't participated in these webinars before. First of all, this slide gives you a couple of instructions about how to use your Q&A window to ask questions when we get ready to get to the Q&A part of this, and we'll look forward to hearing questions from the audience. So just type your questions in the box, and they will get to us. Today's speakers that are with us for this presentation are Joe Prusacki, the Director of the Statistics Division of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Paul Hughes, the Director of Grain and Protein Purchasing for Nestle Purina Pet Care, Jim Robb, the Director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center, and Mark Seaton, the Director of Regulatory and Industry Affairs for the U.S. apple industry. So we have a good perspective coming from folks in government, extension, and users in the private sector. Before we get started, make sure you make any audio adjustments you need to. This slide shows where your full screen toggle is, so if you want to go back and forth between seeing the PowerPoints on the entire screen and having the Q&A chat window, you can do it. Give it a try. Now we're going to see some questions for you. Please answer these. They'll help us evaluate what we're doing here and know who's involved, who we've got involved in the session. Let's see, have we got another set of questions here? I'm waiting for the second question pod here, which hasn't popped up. All right. Well, let's see if we can. We'll give it one last try. Here we go. Here's the third question. What type of federal data and information do you most frequently use? These are the ones that are most frequently requested from NAS. If you have others that you really care about, then be sure to respond to the SurveyMonkey survey at the end of this webinar and let us know about other federal data and information that's really important to you in your role. Okay. And here we'll drop back to question two, including yourself. How many individuals are participating at your site? That gives us an idea of how many people we're really reaching, in addition to the individual registrations. So we know what we're getting here. All right. I think we're approaching the approaching the end here. Okay. I think we're ready to go on. So Joe, if you're ready, we're going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Neil. I'm just waiting for our slides to come up here. So today I'm going to do just a little discussion here on data, data uses, and budget. As Neil pointed out, we being the federal government, we're, you know, being stressed right now with, I would say, an environment that is not conducive to public information. And so we'll just talk a little bit about that. Basically, the NAS mission is to provide timely, accurate, and useful statistics and service to U.S. agriculture. Just a little overview of how I plan to run through this. I want to discuss known data users, and we'll get into that, what I mean about known. A little bit about our FY 2012 and 2013 budgets, and then I guess we'll have a couple questions after that. You know, basically, when NAS talks about our data users, I always think first and foremost about the farmers, ranchers, and producers out there, mainly because those are the guys and ladies and producers, folks that take the time to fill out those reports and send it in, either, you know, by phone, by email, by paper, by mail, and spend some time with our enumerators, because they're the heartbeat of what we do. I also think about local, state, and federal governments. It's really interesting. We get a lot of phone calls from other agencies. We're working real closely with ERS on a constant basis. FSA is asking us a lot of questions these days about farm bill questions, and constantly with RMA. We have a question from time to time from state governments about taxation using land values, and local governments when it gets down to, as we're talking about some of these areas about disasters right now going on with the droughts, potential droughts. Universities contact quite a bit. We do work for them. We provide them data. We have both the researchers on one side and the extension folks on the other. We have our industry groups, your various associations, and we have some represented here as well today. And then we have the marketplace, and I use that as a broad term where Neil talked a little bit about, you know, the price discovery and that sort of thing, where there is a lot of people that use this information to establish, you know, what level things being prices should be. One of the problems NAS has is it's difficult for us to know all our data users, because with the way data are provided today via the internet, there is not that personal connection. And many times we really do not know who our data users are until we have program changes, meaning if a program is eliminated, modified in scope of collection, we being NAS, will start getting quite a bit of feedback on, you know, what happened to this data series, why did you change this, and so forth and so on. How am I, being the data user, how am I supposed to move forward without this information? One concern that I continually have, and I don't know how to move forward and think broadly on this, is that there's a somewhat of a disconnect between data providers and data users. Meaning in many cases, we have various trade associations and such are very supportive of NAS. They really appreciate what we do. They consume our data, but the various people out there that provide us the information, the grower, the rancher, the farmer, they are scratching their head and seeing that us, NAS, asking questions about their operation as an intrusion into their business. It's an intrusion in government. It's gone to the point where NAS is being questioned by our elected officials in some cases, do you folks even need to exist? Because my constituents say there is no need for you. So that is a primary concern of mine. As we move forward into these interesting and turbulent budget activities, you know, NAS, as an agency, we have several survival choices. You know, how do you move forward? One, we can reduce our programs. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. We can reduce the products delivered to the public. We can attempt to become more efficient, and we are working on that, NAS. We are consolidating our data collection facilities to a large facility in St. Louis. We are exploring the feasibility of a regionalization plan where we are drawing down staff in our field offices and moving them potentially, this is still a plan, potentially to regional sites. We could reduce the quality of our data. What I mean by that, we could reduce the number of contacts that we make to farmers, growers, ranchers by reducing sample sizes, but that really is inconsistent with our agency vision when you want to provide timely, accurate, and useful statistics. The accuracy part goes down if you reduce your sample sizes. So that's just a fundamental problem for what we do. Basically, all these options that we want to do move forward require some reduction in staff. I mean, that's a fact that we have to, you know, face and move forward with. Back in October of last year, NAS, you know, we were going through the FY 2012 budget process. And at that time, on the 17th of October, the ASB, Agricultural Statistics Board, notice was posted, and it talked about a reduction in the agricultural estimation programs. This is a list. You could also go to the web and see this. This is a list of the reports that we went through when we had ranked and basically decided, we said we would eliminate or we would reduce the frequency or we would cancel. Basically, the difference between a cancellation and an elimination is that the report was never actually done, and that's in the case of the distillers. And you can see in this list that there was a wide range of commodities being affected, going from farm numbers to January sheep and goat to chemical use, the July cattle report, down to the nurse report, and eliminating some of the various grain stocks reports. As we went through this process, one of the guiding principles of NAS that we have adopted is that we have stated internally and both externally, that we will do what we can to maintain what are called principal economic indicators. Basically, six reports that NAS puts out on various bases are considered principal economic indicators in the United States. I'll list those here for you. One is the quarterly hogs and pigs survey, the monthly cattle and feed survey, the prospective planting slash acreage report, the one that went out this morning, grain stocks, crop production, and the monthly prices. So if it's not one of those big six, as I call it, they are always potential for a modification or elimination. What happened then was after this notice went out on the 15th of November, NAS received word regarding our FY 2012 budget. And you can see here that the conference agreement provided $158.6 million to NAS instead of the $149.5 million and $152.6 million as proposed by the Senate. The thing that's interesting about that, yes, it was good. It was about $8 million more than the midpoint, but it was still about $6 million less than what the President's budget had asked for earlier in 2011. One interesting thing that the conference committee had added in there was that the conference directed NAS to reconsider its decision to eliminate or reduce the frequency of the reports that we had talked about earlier and to restate as many as possible. So what we did was we went back to the drawing board, basically. We went back and looked at that entire list of various reports that we eliminated, and on the 9th of December, an ASB notice was posted that NAS was going to reinstate several estimates. Among these were like the January sheep survey, various reports for the fruits and nuts. Many of those were all but eliminated, and we brought many of those back. However, there were still some reports that didn't come back, and namely one of them being the chemical use program, which was changed quite a bit. One being that we went from an every other year program between fruits, nuts, and vegetables, which were done every other year, and then we had the various field crop surveys that we did. Those were basically doing one. We plan to do one survey. It's either going to be fruit and nuts, or it's going to be vegetables, or it's going to be field crops. More thoughts. We had eliminated the labor problem a while back, but the Department of Labor offered to help. They needed some information from the farm labor system that we have in order to enforce or enact a work through the H-2A program. I mentioned the scaled-back chemical use program. And one guiding principle that we also followed was that our advisory committee's recommendation was to reduce rather than eliminate reports, meaning reduce the frequency of it. In some cases, that's a little bit problematic, one example being the weekly crop progress report. There was some suggestion that maybe we would go to an every other week report, and it was difficult to work through the figures on that because most of that's tied up with people. As the project did that, it takes a lot, quite a bit of personnel. So going to an every other week program would not necessarily save as much as we would have expected. One thing to remember about NASA's budget process is that every program is on a year-to-year basis. And so that, what does that mean is, well, what will happen in 2013? What does that mean for the future? For the chemical use program, our changes that we reduced, what we reduced saved us about $3 million. That brought us back some of the other various reports. One comment that the committee also made to NASA was they recommended or encouraged us to reinstate as much as possible on the chemical use program. Well, the question I always ask then now, if we reinstate the chemical use program, what other programs should be changed? So many, many questions. It's a zero-sum game that we're dealing with now. A little on FY13, the Senate mark is $179.5 million. That's up $20.8 million from the previous year, and that's basically for the Census of Agriculture. We still are looking at $116 or $117 million approximately for our Ag Estimates program. That's no change from the previous year, and that's exactly what was in the President's budget. The House mark, on the other hand, is this $175.2 million. That asks for a reduction in the census of about $1.2 to $1.3 million, and our Ag Estimates program down about $3 million. So as many as you can see, as we move forward, if the FY13 budget comes in somewhere closer to the House mark, we will be going through this entire process as we started out in FY12. With a series of program reductions or proposed program reductions. Your question is as good as mine if you could figure out what the final FY13 budget will be. Well, we are waiting to see. Again, what happens if the appropriations for NASA are less than FY 2012? What's important today to users? And again, as I mentioned, what's important today to users when it's difficult to identify every data user? My concerns and comments are obviously the budget as we move forward. That is overall. I say the press here lately, most of the questions over in the last 2 years have been on corn. Everything's revolving around corn stocks for the most part. Yes, there's other conversations going on, but a lot of the very pointed questions that we get are based about corn and corn stocks. Response rates. I mentioned before, some producers question the need for NAS. And I can ask everyone to provide me with information. How do we close that loop between data providers and thus the data disseminators and you, the data users? Also, the comment here is back in June or early June, we put out a Federal Register notice on release times. This is in response to the CME. And the ICE exchanges announcing they're going to basically 21 to 22 hour a day trading. We're asking the question, is there a better time to release the various crop reports that are currently released now at 8:30 in the morning Is there a better time for that? We are taking public comment until July 9th, and we'll work through that process and provide feedback. That is basically the summation of my presentation. This is my contact information, and I guess, Neil, I'll turn it back to you if there are any basic questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Joe. Great presentation. Let's see if we have any questions coming in from the audience. We'll take time for just a couple of questions. Joe is going to have to run because he's got one of those important reports that's coming out this afternoon that he has to deal with. So we'll take a couple of questions. Here's one for you, Joe. Here's a question. Will there still be the opportunity to do special surveys with outside funding?
Yes, NASS will. Yes, that's a good point, Neil. NASS historically has worked with outside groups to do any sort of special projects that they would like to be done in their particular area, and that is always a hallmark of what we'll do. As long as the organization's basic mission is in alignment with NASS and USDA, we will be working on that as well. We continue to work with that.
Okay. Let's see. I don't see another immediate question, so thank you, Joe. I know you're not going to be here at the end to take more questions, but for those of you who have questions for Joe, he had his contact information up there that will be available along with all the presentations online. So I know NASS always loves to hear from you. So give him a call or send him an email. And now we're going to turn it over to Paul Hughes from Nestle Purina Pet Care.
All right. Thank you, Neil. Hello, everyone. As Joe outlined earlier, I am one of the data users. As I make risk management decisions for a consumer product company, a pet food company, and it's important what NASS does and what USDA does for us in many levels in creating a fair and competitive marketplace. And then en route to demonstrating that, I want to first make an analogy here. I want to start out with the question. The question is, who is Don Dinkinger? If you don't know who Don Dinkinger is, I wouldn't be surprised unless you're a very, very avid baseball fan, and even more so an avid St. Louis Cardinal fan. There'd be no reason for you to know who he is. He is not a baseball player, but an umpire, and an umpire who made a bad call in the 1985 World Series, which to this day, St. Louis Cardinal fans still view as him costing the St. Louis Cardinals the 1985 World Series. Why do I ask who Don Dinkinger is? Is because in many ways I see the USDA is really being the umpires for the game of commodity trading and price discovery that takes place at the CME and elsewhere. My intent here isn't to knock the USDA. As a matter of fact, let me follow it up with one other question here, and that being, who were the other umpires that umpired the 1985 World Series? Of course, nobody ever remembers them because, like USDA reports, the ones that come in as expected, the ones that are non-controversial are easily forgotten, and the market moves on. Those that are questionable or controversial are discussed and linger on for a long period of time. Now, at this point, I want to just take a step back to Economics 101. I imagine many of us on the call here have had intro economics, but very early on in each introductory economics class, the issue or the concept of a perfectly competitive market is discussed. Perfectly competitive market is one which the resources are allocated efficiently. Prices are kept mostly near fair value. Shortages and excesses are rare and corrected fairly quickly. and there's few to no market distortions or market manipulations. You know, all of those are very, very good things. We in our capitalist marketplace value a great deal. Now turn to the right side of the slide here is what are the conditions required for a perfectly competitive market to exist? Is one, you need many buyers and sellers. You need a homogeneous product. You need low barriers to entry, and you need very low transaction costs. And at least in the world I deal in, that all sounds very, very much like the U.S. grain markets. But there is one other thing is they need, for the perfectly competitive market to exist, need equal information for all parties. And this is what USDA, in my opinion, does and does very well. They provide the same timely, accurate, unbiased data to all market participants, whether you're the largest multinational agribusiness or whether you're the smallest farmer, not only in this country but in the world. And there's a lot of countries that are really critical to agriculture that don't do this well, and some that don't even really attempt to do this. And on the next slide, I'm going to turn to a case in point on that, is the case of Indonesian palm oil. Palm oil, not soybean oil, palm oil is the largest produced and consumed vegetable oil in the world. It accounts for nearly 25% of the world veg oil consumption and more than 60% of Indonesia is the single largest producer of palm oil, accounting for 50% of world production. Indonesia provides the world veg oil markets with virtually no objective data on production, stocks, or consumption. What this does is leaves the market ripe for all sorts of manipulations by those with the best independent information. There are organizations in Indonesia that are doing very similar activities to what USDA, USDA NAST is doing. They aren't governmental organizations. They aren't benevolent organizations. They're using that information for their own use. And that is a competitive edge for them. By what the USDA does, it is a great leveler of the playing field, in my opinion, all market participants, not only very, very large companies, but it also advantages small producers probably more so. Okay, now for the next slide, I'm going to get into really what I am using this information for. And what I'm using the information for is essentially all the information that NAST provides is a means to an end for me. And the end being I'm looking for to get to what a stocks to use ratio is at the end of a given crop year. This table here is a balance sheet for U.S. corn, predicting a stocks to use ratio for this crop year of roughly 6.3%, next year of 13.5%, and the stocks to use ratio just being ending stocks divided by total consumption. If I have that information, along with some other pieces of information about various other commodities and macroeconomic information, I can do a reasonably good job of plotting these sorts of charts, which is just the stocks to use ratio on the x-axis, expected prices on the y-axis. So from with the information USDA gets me, provides, we're making estimates as to where we're going to fall on these curves, which will do a great deal of great deal of benefit to us in deciding how we're going to, at Nestle Purina, approach the idea of price risk management and how we go about buying commodities and approach the marketplace and buying grain and soybean products. Now, from these slides, from this slide on, I'm going to just take a few of the USDA NASH reports and, you know, give how I perceive them and their importance and how, you know, what I believe the market accepts these reports. For instance, this first one is the planning intentions and final planning. The planning intentions was released, I believe, on March 30th. The final planning number was essentially released this morning. And what I have on the, again, I have a balance sheet for the U.S. corn market on the right here. Those items that are lines that are highlighted in red are the ones that are impacted by these, by this report. So, for instance, planted area impacts area, which further impacts production, which contributes to supply, which then contributes to ending stocks. So each one of these next slides will have that same sort of theme in red are what's impacted by the report. So planning intentions is a work in progress. It's treated as a solid indication that can be influenced by weather and economics. As was seen this morning, corn planted area did not really change very much from the March number, but the soybean planted area certainly did. The final planning, as again was said, was released this morning, is a very important figure, considered as a very, very firm figure by the marketplace. More or less, that's one of the two variables that will determine supply going forward, the other one being yield. The next set of reports are the monthly yield and production estimates. These are very important estimates. They obviously become more and more important the further you get into the crop year. I would, in my opinion, the most important estimate that USDA NASH releases each crop year for corn anyway, and probably soybeans, is the October number. At that point, the accuracy of their yield and production estimates is getting very, very meaningful. So at that point, you know, we're really getting down to being able to determine what you have on the supply side of the market. The next set of reports are the weekly crop condition reports. We use these really as a proxy for what yield is going to be in the monthly report. Since you're only getting yield estimates from NASS on a monthly basis, this is kind of trying to fill in what's happening in the meantime. They're not particularly meaningful until you get near pollination, you know, this point and for the next, say, month or so. At that point, they're followed very, very closely. And, you know, what we do, and I think many others do in the marketplace, is something very similar to what's in the table to the lower left. You're taking the good, excellent, fair, poor, and very poor ratings and assigning a score to each one of them to come up with a total crop year score. And from there, you can plot them, and they generally fall fairly close to some sort of relationship in crop year score to final yield versus trend. Unfortunately, the last couple of years have kind of fallen out as low outliers along with a couple of years in the 1990, 93, and 95. The next report was also released this morning is the quarterly stocks report. In my opinion, this is the most important figure that NASS puts out each quarter. One, because it is a solid inventory of what is in storage in the U.S. At each quarter. The other reason is it's the only look, albeit an indirect look, into the feed sector and total feed demand, which amounts to about 38 to 36% of total demand each year. These reports have been a big, big source of volatility over the last 2 years. Seven of the last 8 quarterly stocks reports have resulted in limit moves in the CME corn market. Today, report, and it didn't volatility. Matter of fact, it was very, very good today on the CME board. These provide an awful lot of volatility because, one, they are basically, they are such an important report, and they are only done, you know, once every 3 months. So now I'm just going to go down to conclude my comments here. You know, in a review, the USDA is what I'll call the unbiased global umpire of grains and oilseed markets. There's a little praise, but oftentimes much criticism that comes with being the umpire. The expectation is that they get the call or the report right each and every time, which, as Joe pointed out, obviously requires a good deal of resources. They provide a critical function in facilitating a competitive and efficient marketplace, not just in the U.S., but for global grain and oilseed markets. Many important producing countries do not perform this function as well as the USDA, and many of them don't even attempt to do this. USDA reports help market manipulation, help prevent market manipulation, and reduce volatility by providing timely, unbiased, accurate market information to all parties. And that will conclude my comments, and thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul. We've got time maybe for one brief question if somebody somebody has got one, and then we'll go ahead and move on to the next presenter. Okay. Paul, here's a question for you. Which foreign country do you watch the most relative to pending price movements these days?
Oh, that's a that is a very good question. I mean, it all depends upon the market. Certainly South America for the soybean market and for grains. The former Soviet Union is becoming a really, really important player, and increasingly so in the grain markets. You know, so I guess I would say, you know, those two, you know, in the amount of information coming out of the Soviet Union, that is, or former Soviet Union countries of Russia and Ukraine, is fairly sparse. So that one, and their weather is also quite erratic. So that one is one we watch very, very closely, just because of the level of volatility that can come out.
Yeah, I can appreciate the concern about Russia, Paul. I spent some time working with my colleagues at NASS on a project in Russia to try to help improve that information, but it's a long and slow battle. So I think we're now ready to move on to Jim Robb from the Livestock Market Information Center. So Jim, take it away.
And USDA. In terms of this overall meeting, I want to give a few background comments and then move on to what we think are some of the issues. In graduate school, I was taught that data and information was a dichotomy. I think it's actually a continuum. And I think what I might call data, somebody else might call information. So this is actually all rolled together. That's kind of a theoretical point. I think to follow up on the prior speaker, if we're going to talk about competitive markets, if we're going to talk about transparency, if we're going to talk about helping family farmers, if we're going to talk about leveling the playing field, let's not forget the baseline of that, and that is largely data and information. I think one of the points we want to make is why, in our assessment, do we think that these market-based reports are at risk, and in fact, in some cases, are being targeted specifically compared to other programs. And I think there are some clear reasons why. I was going to put the word sexy on this slide. It's because they're not sexy. I think compared to something like the Census of Agriculture, Census of Agriculture tends not to be targeted. It tends to be something that you can explain to a bureaucrat or to a politician and put it in a rather concise package. This is a whole array of market reports, market information that really is much harder to explain in a very simplistic context, and I think that certainly contributes to why these are being targeted. This overall, if we look at USDA, it's a mix of voluntary and mandatory reports. Obviously, it's a rich array of voluntary reports that are based on voluntary providing of information in the livestock sector. It not only comes from producers, it comes from packers, it comes from all types of market participants. In terms of the Livestock Marketing Information Center and all of our member institutions, which really represents the whole livestock sector, there's important reports from National Ag Statistics Service. Basically, every livestock report they do and the feedstuff reports are very important to the livestock sector. In terms of USDA's Ag Marketing Service, we track most all of their livestock reports. So they have, and then the grain reports that they do, and we'll highlight some of those. Foreign Ag Service provides very important reports, especially the weekly trade data, both on live meat products and on the grain side. And then they work very diligently to provide data that's useful to us out of the Commerce Department, which would not be near as accessible or near as valuable without the monthly work of Foreign Ag Service. And then there's Economic Research Service. We rely on them for many things, including retail prices, which are very problematic in terms of if you want to discuss the details, but they are the only source available. We rely on them for some calculations of spread relationships, difference between, let's say, wholesale and retail prices and producer-level prices, et cetera. Again, something that tends to be controversial, but some people would view as a data point. We also rely on them on very much in a data sense on things like calculating the aggregate disappearance of dairy products, which is actually a very cumbersome and very complex process because we have hundreds of products that are produced in the dairy industry. Let me jump down to the next point here. Some of these USDA reports are legally required, but not many of them. And I want to stress, not many are legally required, which puts them at risk to kind of bureaucratic whims and political pressure. Joe did mention what he called the special economic indicators. That was a very small subset that he mentioned there. And I think I want to expand on that just slightly and mention that, for example, he mentioned quarterly hogs and pigs. But maybe they don't have to provide it quarterly. I think he overstated monthly cattle on feed. That could be reduced to an annual report. There's nothing on cattle inventory, nothing. Almost every report that the markets use were not included in that list that they think are critical economic indicators that are feeding into the national system of economic indicators and kind of the macroeconomic environment of assessment. Also at Ag Marketing Service, we've had some major changes. It's a federal state market news process that has really come under pressure lately. We've had three states essentially lose their state component of that, and we've lost lots of our pricing information. Wisconsin, Texas, Louisiana, California, my home state, lost their market news decades ago. I still get calls today from researchers at universities, from agribusiness, and from state government asking me for where are the California data and how come you don't have them? And it's because they do not cooperate in that effort. In terms of recurring reports that are constantly on the chopping block, which we think are largely a disservice to the livestock industries, the mid-year cattle inventory last year in the drought, a few years ago we lost quality in that data set where we had a state-by-state assessment in the mid-year cattle inventory was taken to just a national summary report. Last year in the drought in Texas, Oklahoma, et cetera, very difficult to manage. Sheep and goats, a year ago, that report, the mid-year was eliminated. Then come 3 months later, the January 1 report is reported to be in process of being eliminated. I think also we need to think about production disposition and income reports. Those are kind of the value in the ag sector. If NAST does not do that, then agencies like Economic Research Service will be under pressure and probably need to be thinking ahead as to how we're going to provide those things. It's going to put pressure on other agencies, this is the bottom line, as we lose these reports. We also lose effort in terms of detail here. We lose state-level data in these detail. We also have a lot of county-level data that is used by, let's say, risk management agency for crop insurance, et cetera, very sensitive data. We're losing that level of detail. I mentioned earlier we could have, even under the current guidelines, you could take a quarterly hogs and pigs report and say annual is satisfactory. Annual is not satisfactory in an industry that is biologically based, whether it be crop or livestock, and you have multiple turnovers per year. And I think we have a lot of structural change that gets missed if we go to this less reporting time frame in the whole overall marketplace. I want to highlight the Southern Plains data that was lost in Texas, where we essentially lost the state reporting, so we did not have, potentially, grain prices being reported in the Southern Plains. And that seems to be a grain market story, but it really isn't. It's also a feedlot story. The feedlots in the Southern Plains use the AMS market reports to price the corn in the feeding where a rancher is retaining ownership or other people are feeding cattle. So it's part of the pricing system for the livestock sector. Fortunately, AMS stepped up, but that was a real problematic area. Also, that particular report, if we look across the AMS reports, what's mandated by NASS under the economic indicators is ag prices. A large portion of ag prices, those data are populated by their sister agency, which is AMS. And so these are all interrelated, and that sometimes is, and I think often is overlooked, even at times within USDA. Farm Service Agency, we hear the question often, and coming from producers, we already are giving our crop data to Farm Service Agency, why do we provide it again? We provide it again because the acreage report this morning was very important, and we can't wait for FSA to get data compiled in November to find what's going on in the marketplace. Last year we had problems with Food Safety Inspection Service not providing in a timely way the livestock and poultry slaughter data, which are mandated by law, but they were not effectively sharing it with their sister agency. That may have had computer dimensions, et cetera, but there are agency linkages here that are behind the scenes that really need to be worked on and maintained to provide the data and information flows in our marketplace. We also have Animal Plant Health Inspection Services that collects the weekly data on the animal flows from Canada that are then compiled by Ag Marketing Service that then feed into the system. There are problems at times in terms of that flow of information across agencies, and that needs to be dealt with at times. So my final comments are that quality data do not magically appear. I think this is a classical public good. Now, in the second bullet point, that tough was a typo, but then I read the dictionary and I decided I liked the word there. This is not easy stuff to do. This is not new. I think largely when we explain this to politicians and bureaucrats that we understand that this is a classical public good. Timely data are more and more important. Time series data are critical. Cannot just do random reports and expect markets to function effectively. What do we all need to do as a community? We need to comment to Federal Register notices when they come from all agencies and stress the importance of these data and not just ignore that. We must clearly reference and correctly reference USDA sources, whether we're in the agribusiness sector and commodity groups, et cetera. It's long past the time where we don't reference USDA data or we just put USDA as the data source is no longer acceptable. We need to encourage multi-agency communication and cooperation. That's a key. I think they do that, but I think we need to do that better. And we need to educate Congress and our stakeholders. And it's very frustrating as a professional ag economist and market analyst to really even have this as a topic of discussion. This should be a no-brainer. Unfortunately, it is not. And these market-based reports seem to be the ones that are most at risk. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to questions.
Okay, Joe. Or Jim?
I'll be Joe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've got one quick, I got one quick question for you while we get ready to move on to our final presenter. What do you see the commodity group stepping up to help fill the gap here?
Really, you know, in terms of in the Texas situation, for example, the commodity group suggested they could step up and fill the gap on the price information. They are not an unbiased source of information. Even though they are a commodity group. I think in terms of stepping up to to create awareness. I think so. They need to step up in terms of their producers. But I think there really is, you know, the unbiased and credible source of information is USDA. And even though many commodity groups and their members of our center, they are not viewed as necessarily an unbiased and a source of information.
Thank you very much, Jim. And now it's time to move on to Mark Seaton, the Director of Regulatory and Industry Affairs for the U.S. Apple Association. Mark, it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Neil. I want to thank the sponsors of this webinar as well and the coordinators for this opportunity to discuss how our industry, like the others that you've heard presentations from, uses this very important federal data. My presentation is going to highlight a few areas, but it's not going to be certainly comprehensive. Some of the sources that we're going to talk about are NAS, the ERS, which has been mentioned before, the Foreign Agricultural Service, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's probably a new one. Surprisingly enough, we get the source of Red Delicious apples from BLS figures. Well, there are lots of ways in which we use NAS data, and we integrate our data with NAS, and we actually share it with a lot of federal agencies, too, after we use their numbers and combine them with ours. The publication to the left is our market news, and it is published monthly from November through June, and it is an inventory from about 500 storage facilities in the major apple-producing areas. And the industry uses it to take a look at apples by location, by variety, and that means both state and regional figures. As a part of this report, we include the NAS price report on apples, the monthly price report. The people in the industry, of course, are in the process of marketing their apples. The marketing year for apples begins, the crop begins harvest probably in mid to late August, and is usually wrapped up by mid-November, or I should say early to mid-November, in that range. And the industry is keenly aware of making sure that we market our apples, and we're looking at the price history and the price trends in that process. Another way in which we use this, of course, the August crop report is probably the anchor of the information that we use. We couple that with the non-citrus fruits and nuts annual summary that comes out in July. The other publication that we use, and I'll talk about that later after I get done with these other two, the Agricultural Chemical Survey, and this is a critical survey. And I want to talk about some of the things that Joe talked about in terms of the timing changes in the data collection. So we'll talk about these three reports in the next couple minutes. The data that we use combines the information on the varietal components, because we, unlike USDA, we do track production by variety or the amount of inventory by apple varieties. We utilize the August crop report in the process of developing our annual analysis. We use data from the August crop report from NAS, the ERS, and the non-citrus fruits and nuts annual summary to develop our annual production utilization analysis. This analysis is released typically 1 week after the August crop report is out. It takes us some time to integrate all of the numbers that we receive from USDA with ours to put together kind of a state of the industry at that point in time. The report has 44 charts of data covering all industry sectors from production, packing, shipping, processing, and retailing. It has an analysis of the past year's production and utilization in terms of what was last year's crop used for, where did it go, how much was exported, etc. And it has analysis and projections based on the USDA August crop estimate. So we take both the historical data provided by NAS and the most current data in developing this planning tool. How is it used? In short-term planning, this the combination that we get in our production utilization analysis using USDA data, it's a tool for buyers and sellers to negotiate price and supply agreements for new crop, fresh apples, and processed products. I know the term market transparency has been used, and this is a valuable tool in that regard, and it comes from an unbiased source. I think the left to itself, we would not have a tool to base our pricing and agreements on. In terms of long-term planning, it's also critical. The historical and current production data are used for capital expenditure decisions, such as adding storage, whether you're adding a controlled atmosphere storage for your apples, packing, shipping operations, or processing capacity. All of these are substantial investments, and the industry utilizes the data that we compile from NAS and from the other federal sources in making these decisions. The second part of this that I want to talk about that was mentioned earlier is the Agricultural Chemical Use Survey. In some ways, some people look at it as quite obscure. For us, this is a very critical piece of information. We utilize this, and currently it's done every 2 years in the fruit industry. And there was a proposal, of course, driven by budget concerns to move that to a five-year interval. We are very concerned about that because that information is critical. We develop comments on EPA regulatory decisions based upon the data from that chemical use survey. Data from the survey is also used to establish minimum residue levels, or MRLs, that are accepted in the international trading community by our international trading partners, and that is absolutely vital to the export of the 28% of the U.S. apple production annually. Apples are the largest fruit export from the United States. Last year's value was right at $900 million. So this is a very, very important piece of information for us. Separately, EPA utilizes data from that survey in a variety of ways, in registration, re-registration, and in product labeling decisions. How do we use it? And this is really only the tip of the iceberg in terms of the utilization of data that we have put in place in the apple industry. NAS and other USDA and federal government data, for that matter, is widely used in the apple industry. Both fresh and processing sectors provides important market transparency. Current USDA crop estimates are used as a basis for the pricing and supply agreements that I mentioned earlier. Historical and current data are valuable tools used in capital spending decisions, adding storage, packing, shipping, and in processing capacity. Other NAS data, such as the biennial, and we hope it remains biennial, chemical use survey, are used in responding to regulatory proposals and by other federal regulatory agencies. Just a final note in concluding, I want to say that Joe Prasaki and his group are much appreciated by us. He's got an excellent staff, and Joe and his staff are great to work with. They are responsive, and they've been very responsive to us, and we're grateful for their work and for the work of the reporters, the data generators, and the other federal agencies that we use. This is a very, very critical thing for our business, and agriculture in general is a major contributor to offsetting our balance of payments deficits, and apples are a part of that. Our $900 million, once you offset that with the imports, we still generate $750 million of positive trade to the balance sheet. With that, I want to thank you again, and we'll leave it open for questions.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much. We're very close to the official end of this webinar, but we do have permission to stay online for a little bit longer. So for those of you who would like to ask our presenters a few more questions after we do the final wrap-up, stay online. We'll be here. Let's see. Let's try to take one question for Mark before we move into the wrap-up. Mark, who do you see as a possible alternative entity to help develop some of the unbiased data that you require?
Boy, that is the thing that $64 billion question, that is really, particularly in the specialty crop industry, where we have probably 62 specialty crops, of which apples are one, any one of those crops is dwarfed by the cattle, the livestock sector, and the grain sectors. They're so much larger. In terms of finding someone to provide the financial wherewithal to provide this data, that is difficult in itself. I certainly, probably the only other choice would be to have the industry groups get together to develop that data. But I think it was mentioned earlier that the industry groups are made up of the individual competitors. And unlike USDA, it's pretty hard for someone to accuse USDA data generator. He might be off the mark. He might make an estimate wrong, but it usually is not because of bias. So I don't really have an answer to it.
Yeah. I think that's the dilemma here. We're dealing with a classic public good in an environment where public sector funding is under significant pressure. Thank you very much, Mark. Thanks to all of our presenters, Joe Prusaki, Paul Hughes, Jim Robb, and Mark Seaton. I think this has been a really excellent webinar. As I mentioned, stick around for a few minutes, and we'll take a few more questions for Paul, Jim, and Mark. And if you have questions for Joe, be sure to give him a call or send him an email. If you submit some here, we'll pass them along as well. So I'd like to remind you that today's presentations will be saved using web seminar technology. The slides and webinar will be available at www.cfair.org. And we'd like to thank the Ag in Uncertain Times team, who helped us to put on this webinar, and you can find them at this link on the web, or just Google Ag in Uncertain Times. And you can find recordings of webinars, presenter slide sets, and much more at their website. So with that, thank you to the National Association of Departments of Agriculture and Montana State University for being partners. I really hate to be in the position of thanking Farm Foundation NFP for sponsorship, since that's the organization I'm involved with. So let's call this to a halt. Here's the file share window, and just take a moment, if you would, to be sure to go to the SurveyMonkey and take the survey. This will help us to bring you better products as we move into the future. In the meantime, those of you who have questions, keep typing them in, and we'll go ahead and pass them on. Let's see if we've got something for people here. Ah, here's one. Jim, here's a question for you. Do you see regional entities like universities stepping up to fill gaps in NAS data using private funding?
I think it's going to be very difficult. If you think about the underlying thing of doing a survey, the foundation of the survey process is having a strong list frame and the list of all the producers in the system. That's a constant maintenance activity. That's an activity at NAS, for example, that interfaces the Census of Agriculture with these crop reports. You can do all kinds of surveys, but it's getting that fundamental list frame can be very difficult. And I think that's at a minimum, if these other groups want to do it, they're going to have to use that proprietary. NAS cannot share those numbers. NAS does not make anything publicly available. They could do the survey for these regional groups. But again, I don't think you'll do the quality of work trying to do it, because you cannot get that fundamental list of producers put together, which is part of the hard work at NAS that often goes unrecognized.
Thank you very much, Jim. Let's see. Got another question here. One last question here for Paul. What types of internal checks do you do at Nestle Purina on quality checks on the data that you get from USDA to evaluate their accuracy.
You know, actually, it's kind of funny how I'm going to answer this is we do virtually none. You know, we use USDA data to check our own accuracy, but you know, we hold the USDA data in such high regard that's the benchmark at which we're kind of checking our own self against. So you know, they're kind of the teacher or the professor with the right answers as far as we're concerned. So we may from time to time question whether they have the right answer or not, but ultimately we've found that the marketplace accepts their reports, their answers, and reacts to it. And you know, it's futile to believe that you're right when they're wrong. So you know, we really don't use the anything to check theirs, but we check ours against their information.
Okay. Well, I think we're approaching the time where we're going to need to shut down. So we'll call it a day. This has been a great opportunity, a great webinar, and I think that was a great note to close on, Paul, with that comment that whatever the issues and problems we have with data, USDA still for most of the private sector in the U.S. remains the benchmark. With that, thank you very much for participating. Be sure and if you haven't done it, click on the link here and complete this brief SurveyMonkey survey. We really want to find out what you thought. And if you have other areas of data that you're concerned about that we didn't mention in the questionnaire at the beginning, be sure to mention those on the SurveyMonkey. Thanks again, and goodbye to all of you until next time.